This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
Listening to Keyboard Kimura, the official mixed martial arts podcast of The Province. Here are your hosts, Paul Chapman and E. Spencer Kite.
Welcome, everybody, to the Keyboard Kimura podcast here on Province Sports Radio. As you can hear, I am your host, E. Spencer Kite. That means our man, Paul Chapman, is once again sidelined. Doctor's appointments, busy work schedule, being the managing editor of The Province. Chappie, get feeling better, get some of that workload off your desk so we can sit down and talk about MMA again. But as always, when Chappie is gone, I am very happy to be able to tag in my good friend, my partner in crime, my travel companion at times, Mr. Dwayne Finley. Thanks for doing this, dude. Appreciate it.
It's like I need to have like the official bat phone, you know what I mean? Like let's do it right. It'd be a hard like landline that runs from here to Canada, to the west coast of Canada. And when Chappie goes down, the phone rings. I'm here, and because I'm always ready to ride shotgun with you, my brother.
It has to just have that red light too. Like it's got to be that red light phone that comes on, like the old campy Adam West Batman show. So that you just see it light up and know I'm needed on the Keyboard Kimura podcast.
well, it can't be red because that's already in our house when my wife's mad at me. Anything that happens like that red phone lights up, I know it's time to be obedient and answer it. It's just like green's a good color, like a good Kelly green, you know, like. Yeah, or we'll figure something out. Maybe we can do red and white, you know, kind of salute to the maple leaf.
Well, green kind of works for what will be the subject of this podcast.
Great, great segue.
Because while we don't have any MMA events to recap, I mean, we'll probably get into Bellator a little bit at the end of it. They have a show coming up on Friday. Their combined Bellator Dynamite kickboxing MMA extravaganza. The main subject of this, as you probably expected, faithful listeners, is what I can only call the Nick Diaz fiasco. For those that haven't been paying attention, for those that live outside of the bubble and only venture in every so often, the quick rundown is this. Nick Diaz, back in January, following his fight with Anderson Silva, tested positive for the presence of marijuana metabolites for a third time. His hearing with the Nevada State Athletic Commission was postponed and backed up until Monday. Basically, Diaz went in. His lawyer, Lucas Middlebrook, laid out a phenomenal defense, shooting holes in the shaky testing, shooting holes in the shaky results. Basically setting up the groundwork for what should be a pretty straightforward appeal somewhere down the road, because he, like the rest of us, knew that no matter what was said at that hearing on Monday, Nick Diaz was going to get railroaded. He did indeed. They handed down a 5-year suspension, fined him 33% of his fight purse from that event, which works out to, I believe, $145,000. And that's only after Pat Lundvall had said, I put a motion forward to ban him for life. And thankfully, Anthony Marnell and the rest of the people on the commission kind of looked at her and were like, I can't be down with life, but let's do 5 years. Nick, of course, then came out, spoke with some of our colleagues, John Morgan, Heidi Fang, Brett Okamoto, delivered sort of a standard Nick Diaz response, called them a bunch of dorks, said they can't beat him in a real fight, so they got to beat him in a courtroom. As always, professed that he is the greatest fighter and everyone else is holding him down. Got into a discussion, I guess, later that night with Ariel Helwani that Ariel has since posted on MMA Fighting, sort of detailing again the hard scrabble come up of Nick Diaz, which I always find interesting because that to me doesn't necessarily factor, but people seem to weigh that in there. We'll get into all of that. I guess my starting point with you on this is just how absolutely batshit crazy is this decision?
Oh, it's unreal. And it's something. Now, let me say this, like, you know, this whole outpouring and this is bigger than MMA. And, you know, this is like this grave injustice. Look, there's elements of that are true. Okay, I do think there's certain things that once this eventually gets, once the kind of buzz of the moment, no pun intended, gets stripped down, I think there's going to be elements here, and I know we're going to talk about this later, so I'll leave most of it for that. But I do want to say, like, the initial response, you know, once that kind of simmers down and we get kind of down to the facts of this, this is absolutely insane. I mean, to go out, you know, even if you just look at, like, you know, it was his third offense, because, I mean, that's what I was thinking. You know, I'm like, it's his third offense. He's going to get popped for sure. This isn't going to be pretty. And then his defense comes in and shoots holes in the fact that the three tests he took, two of which were by a WADA, World Anti-Doping Association accredited lab, both of those tests he passed.
Right.
With similar levels. The third, the middle test that he took right in between, that was tested by this Quest Labs that is out of accreditation that NSAC likes to use, was five times over the allowed limit. So, I mean, even if you're like, just from a scientific point of view, if you're looking at things and you're like, okay, one thing is not like the rest, these things kind of point back to the thing we already knew, that the decision about Nick Diaz's fate was sealed. And doing so in a conversation I had a week before when asked about this, I called it. If Nick Diaz was in a position to make Las Vegas a lot of money, which he's not anymore, 2 years ago, a year ago, yes, they would have pushed the fight through, because they have a history of pushing big fights through despite shady circumstances. Nick Diaz is towards the end. He's lost, what, four consecutive fights or three consecutive fights. He's not going to get another title shot. He is somewhat of a draw still. I mean, yeah, he is a draw. People turn in to watch him fight, but he's not going to make them the future money. So what I predicted was that, yeah, something terrible was coming his way, because Nick Diaz, just even if after a year suspension, you know, he'd come back, and then what? You know, what kind of fight would he have? What kind of income could he generate Las Vegas? And knowing that it wasn't going to be what it once was, that's how I knew we were going to see something like this. So when Lonval, you know, I don't think that they planned for a lifetime ban to come out of her mouth, but she got so her hubris is off the scale. You know what I mean? Like, so when he opposed her the way he did, or right, when his counsel, she goes crazy and goes, you know, and then, like you said, Marnell, they kind of pull it back. But let's be honest. Look at this. If this 5-year ban holds up, Nick Diaz, I believe, is 32 years old. He could be 31, but I think he's 32.
Correct.
5 years puts him back at 37 years old when he enters the cage. Now, coming up in the main event, we have of the next card in Japan, Josh Barnett and Roy Nelson. I believe Josh is 37. I know Roy's 39. I mean, these guys are both at the end of their careers. So what you're presuming is that you're going to give Nick Diaz, oh, well, you didn't lifetime ban him, but you're at least going to give him an encore. You know what I mean? So we're talking about a guy who's taken his entire livelihood away from him. But as I know, Spencer, and I'll toss this back to you, what did you think? Well, I know what you think, but I want to hear what you explained to the listeners. That what did you think about everybody just kind of edging around the fact that this guy answered that questionnaire, which is, that's the thing that's going to come back to haunt him, and answered that questionnaire and broke the rules again for the third time?
Well, and this is the part that always gets me with Nick, and I mean, with anybody that tries to plead ignorance or I didn't know. One of the chief responsibilities as an athlete is, one, knowing what you're putting in your body. So when Anderson Silva gets up there, as he did, and does the, oh, a friend sent me this unmarked elixir from Thailand that was supposed to be for, you know, a sexual enhancement serum. Turns out it's got steroids in it. What are we going to do? Womp, womp, womp. It's like, come on. Like, you have, the onus is on you to know what you're doing. And then you have this questionnaire that gets filled out before every event declaring, you know, what you've used, what you've ingested, which what may turn up. And Nick just fills it out, like writes his name on it, or somebody fills it out for him and puts his name on it and leaves basically everything else blank, or says no to everything else. When it's like, dude, you know, you smoked weed. We like, there's no discussion here of maybe Nick didn't smoke weed. Nick smoked weed. Like, it's going to be in his system one way or the other. Now, you run into a ton of questions about in competition and out of competition and things like that. And I know Luke Thomas made a point on, he did a video sort of in the wake of this saying some rules are stupid and you're supposed to oppose them, and that's how society moves forward and stuff like that. And on a larger scale, I agree that the way we address marijuana use and in competition and out of competition are larger topics that we need to discuss, that we need to address, not just in martial arts, in mixed martial arts, but in athletics and society as a whole, because it is being decriminalized across your country and mine. But in the moment, going into that fight in January 2015, those were the rules that were in place. Nick Diaz is well aware of them because he has broken them in the past. So this dude just never does himself any favors whatsoever to make any of this not happen. And I know there are going to be people that hear this and want to get upset with me for what I'm about to say. But I mean, it feels, it's a deja vu for me, because 3 years ago, after the Carlos Condit fight, when he got suspended, our old boss and colleague Matt Brown and I had the similar conversation that we have anytime this stuff happens, of like, hey, Nick, we'll make you a deal. If you stop smoking weed for 30 days, we're going to give you $500,000. And Nick goes, yeah, all right, I'll take the 500 grand, but I'm not stopping smoking weed. And so you're going to get caught and you're going to get face the punishment. That's just like, I understand that weed isn't nearly as bad as steroids or cocaine use or any of those things. But I think we get lost in the, like, how much people love Nick Diaz and how much people think weed is harmless and not something that they should be testing for at all. And we start seeing all the memes pop up of use steroids, 1 year suspension, use marijuana, 5 year lifetime ban. Well, it's his third offense. It was Anderson Silva's first for steroids. And as much as it sucks that the NSAC wants you to come in and kiss the brass ring, and it's a much bigger production about showing contrition than it needs to be, Nick doesn't do anything to help him ever. And so, well, I think it's crap that they go overboard in punishing him. And I think you're absolutely correct in talking about Pat Lundvall's hubris, and you could see it bubbling up in her as Nick Diaz sat there doing his best Dave Chappelle impersonation, pleading the fifth over and over and over again. There is also some, you have to learn from your mistakes in this. Like, this isn't the first time it has happened. You know what's going to happen if you have marijuana present in your system after that fight. So figure out some way that you can make this better on yourself so that you're not punished, so that you're not forced to the sidelines. Because as much as he wants to say, it's everybody else holding me down, I'm just doing me and they don't want to let me be me, the guidelines are set out that one element of your life that you do so frequently and can't seem to get away from is something that you can't do going into competition. And as much as it's stupid because it's weed and it's, you know, as long as he's not getting high in the dressing room or maybe the night before his fight, it shouldn't really be a big deal. It's on the books as such. And you gotta, as stupid as it is, you gotta give yourself the opportunity to not get dinged like this and lose 5 years of your career, effectively probably the rest of your career, because you want to smoke dope.
The first two things that pop up in my mind, one is, you know, as Ariel pointed out on Twitter, he's like, you know, being anti-establishment is what has endeared Nick Diaz to the fans. And while that's true, it just lost him 5 years, right. 5 years of income. And I know Nick Diaz loves the fans, but I also know Nick, and I know Nick, money matters to Nick Diaz.
Right.
Okay. So, you know, so being anti-establishment here, you know, I get standing up for yourself, but like this just, you just have to do it. You know, I just don't like the way it was all done. Granted, I think they presented a sharp case, but then a pissing match happened, you know, with Diaz's attorney saying, oh, you know, you're okay. Even though you're obviously misinterpreting the law, you can proceed, you know, like going back and forth. It got out of hand. I also want to put into this when you mentioned Anderson Silva, anybody who's ever worked in this business and has been to an Anderson Silva fight or been around Anderson Silva himself knows that that man does not travel without 20 or 30 other people around him. It's a production. It's a chorus line production. Hell, there's some jabberwockies in the mix that might just pop out and dance whenever. There's no way anybody who's ever seen this knows that Anderson Silva is going to just get a vial sent to him from Thailand and ingest it. I mean, come on. But Anderson Silva did the hat in hand dance, the I didn't know, the famous somebody at the gym gave this to me.
Right.
And that's what they want, right? Like I the Diaz situation points out, INSAC wants you to come in there. They want you to say, or, you know, they know you're not going to admit guilt. They want you to tap dance, but then ultimately say, yeah, I was wrong. It was my fault. I shouldn't have done this. I shouldn't have trusted Dr. You know, the doctor from The Simpsons. You mentioned him. I don't remember his name.
Well, I mean, it's the Alistair Overeem comes in there, puts up a Dr. Nick Riviera character, and Skip Avanzino tells him he's a gentleman and a fabulous champion, and they look forward to having him fight in the state of Nevada, and do you want to grab dinner and take my daughter out? Like,
well, yeah.
It's ridiculous, and it shouldn't be the way it is, and that's a larger topic for another day, I think, and hopefully this spurs on some conversations and some change in the Nevada State Athletic Commission, because it does look like an absolute dog and pony show. But you also got to know going in that do you have to sort of acquiesce a little bit if you're Team Diaz and just not go in there trying to start a fight because you know that's not ever going to do you any good?
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's the old, like, you know, and Diaz has definitely been, you know, like you said, a hard knock upbringing. He's from a tough place, man. Anybody who's never been through Stockton or Lodi or that area of Northern California, it's rough, man. Like, it's no joke. And I mean, most people are Sons of Anarchy fans, so you should understand that like north of the Bay, you know, is tough. So, but what I'm saying is, it's that mentality, man. I have friends like that I grew up with who are just like that, man. They're like, you know what? I got this probation. I don't give a shit, man. They go in, you know, instead of wearing, like, they think like there's this dog and pony show that by putting on a shirt and tie and being, say, contrite, like, as you said, to the law at hand, then you're somehow lesser value. That, like, takes away your, like, street credit. And it's like, no, man, you go in there. You address the fact that what happened. The judge is going to ask you such and such. You got to figure out, and then you're like, okay, do I really want to continue? Do I want to give away my freedoms or my luxuries just because I can't take my medicine? I know these puns are coming out hard, and I'm not trying, but I'm just saying that, like, you have to. You have to. Like, it's a walk you have to make. Hey, I was doing 35 in a work zone. I know you guys are on kilometers or whatever up there, but down here,
we understand.
Down here in the real world, dog, you speed through a school zone, it's an additional $400 fine, right, man? So then you can debate, well, nah, man, like, I wasn't doing that, or, you know, or the gun was off, or, you know, I didn't see the lane change, I was going with the flow of traffic. There's all kinds of things that you can say, but at the end of the day, you were you were speeding,
right?
Okay, you were going faster than what you should have been, and then so then you have to go to court, and then you go to court, and now, mind you, this wasn't like a criminal case,
right?
This is like a civil hearing. So that's why it gets me, like, I was just dying that I see all this, like, Fifth Amendment stuff and people are just going crazy, and I'm like, dude, if this guy was up, you know. Yeah, and I get, you know, evoking the, because Nick Diaz starts talking about weed. I'm sure he evokes, you know, he starts, you know, getting into all kinds of other trouble,
right,
with the probations that he has. And let me repeat that. all kinds of other trouble that he's got into because of these things. DUI, possession, those things. I'm not talking about fighting. I'm talking about his life.
Correct.
Okay. So, you know, those things are a testament of character. It is. It's a testament of character. If you repeatedly, you know, I tell my wife this all the time, bless her heart. I am an intelligent man. I cannot be statistically wrong 100% of the time. It's just not possible. I have to be right sometimes. But then there's the case that some people just don't ever admit, like, hey, man, I should not have been speeding through that school zone. I got popped. I shouldn't have been driving after a couple drinks. I shouldn't have had this in the car with me. And I shouldn't have been smoking during my fight camp.
Right.
Okay. So now you get into the other side of it. Okay. It'd be like, would – now, and this is something I don't know, so I'm just asking. Say if a person has like a chronic back issue, okay, and they're taking – painkillers to get through that back issue, okay, and they're also training for the fight because they need to fight for a living. Now, since it's prescribed to them, is that something that's allowed? Because from what I understand, opiates aren't allowed in your system at fighting at all.
I would assume that it's something that A, has to be declared on that questionnaire, which Nick Diaz never fills out properly. B, it would be something that you would have to cycle off going into your training camp. And it sort of becomes that, you know, if you can't fight and you can't exist without it, then should you really be fighting? Is this really what you need to be doing going forward? And I understand that's a difficult question for anybody. And that's, you know, people will want to say, Nick Diaz has a prescription. He needs it for X. He needs marijuana for X, Y, and Z. And so he shouldn't have to not fight just because he needs these things. But to me, like, if it's laid out in the rules of his work and in the guidelines of his work that you can't. I think to me, one of the interesting things with it is if it was anything but marijuana, I think we're having an entirely different conversation. And that's obviously part of the larger discourse that has to happen here, because marijuana is changing and the perception of marijuana is changing globally. But I do think it's one of those things that, you know, whether it's painkillers for a back injury or marijuana, it's something that you have to taper yourself off of and not have present in your system, either when they come and knock on the door at the gym and say, hi, random test, or, you know, you do your piss test after your fight, because if it is there, then there's a chance you're going to get dinged. And the one thing, and this is, I'll circle it back to my sort of one Nick Diaz never helps himself, is at least if you declare it on that form that, hey, this could show up, then it's not like you're trying to get one over on the, and that was the big thing of this. And I mean, we heard it from Anthony Marnell, who probably didn't know that his mic was still hot, as he whispered to Skip Avanzino, it's about disrespect. And they brought that up in the sentencing and in the deliberation. But like, dude, just do yourself some favors and say, yep, smoked weed 17 days ago. So there's probably going to be a little bit of residual metabolites when you test me.
Yeah, and see, and that's what I'm saying is, like, by getting into the prescription side of things, then you start to open up a different kind of door, and it's all about how you walk through it. I mean, I believe, was it Forrest Griffith got in trouble because of, was it Xanax? Like,
yeah,
if my memory serves right, it's like the Shogun fight, right?
I believe so.
Yeah, so, you know, I don't know. I you know, I'm not a, by no means a legal expert, but I do know the type, you know. I mean, it's just, and what I mean by that, no disrespect, I just know people who carry that same type of mentality that it's kind of F the world.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the truth of the matter, and I'm sorry, I don't remember who said this. I saw it online, but I thought it was poignant, is, yeah, it's okay to have the F the world mentality, but eventually the world Fs you back.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's the truth, man. I mean, like, there has to be, you know, some bend in it. Or if that's the way it is, and you're like, you know, you walk in there, throw your, you know, the Diaz double birds up at him, and you're like, you know what? Yeah, I'll take my 5 years, whatever, bam, whatever. You know, I'm out of here. I didn't need you anyway. But that's not what we're seeing. We're seeing right. that bravado. But then afterwards, it's like, hey, well, why are they doing this to me? Right. That's what's always thrown me off about this Diaz thing is it's so like it's the attitude and their approach is so brash, and then after bad stuff happens, it's like, well, why are they picking on me? You know, it's like, well, dude, you know, like I don't get it, man. Like, you know, the easiest way to not have this happen, as we've said time and time again, is to exist within the parameters. Like, okay, you know what you can and can't do. So don't do it. You've been fighting. He's been fighting for almost 15 years now. And are these laws antiquated in that regard? Absolutely. Society, the world, everything's changing. But they are still the law right now. I think, you know, you see, I know speaking up against it's not the popular thing, but I've seen like Joe Warren and a couple other people be just, you know, kind of state the obvious.
Right.
Like that was the rule. Now, so, but here's the thing too. And in Diaz's defense, and they did pose this, what I'm most interested to see is what happens with these three, the timeline of these three tests, because that's the part that just doesn't sit right to me. You know what I mean? I believe he was tested at like 7 o'clock, like 7:25. That one came back negative, tested post fight. So like 11:50, and that came back negative, and somewhere in between, he registered like a 5-time the legal limit. You know?
Right.
Crazy.
It's the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio. E. Spencer Kite talking with Dwayne Finley, getting into all things Nick Diaz. I agree with you that the timeline and sort of the three tests and picking the one that suits the NSAC's needs is going to be a big sticking point when this does get appealed. And we know it is being appealed. Lucas Middlebrook has already stated that they will appeal this, called it a kangaroo court and various other things, which are very apt and true. Just circling back to what you said about sort of that want to have the F the world mentality and then turn around and say, well, why is this happening? To me, it's that sense of entitlement that we see. And I don't want to be the grumpy old man that's screaming, get off my lawn, but it's the sense of entitlement of I want all these things and I want them the way I want them. And I don't care what the rule is or what I'm supposed to necessarily do for them. I just want them. And you need to make that happen for me. And when it doesn't, it's everyone else's fault and everyone else is to blame. And why can't poor Nick Diaz smoke weed and fight and be the best fighter in the world? Well, it's because the Nevada State Athletic Commission and everybody else is trying to hold him down. There's no recognition of his role in any of this. And that's always tough for me to take, because as much as I can sit here and say 100% that the NAC was way out of line, that this was absolutely not about just a test. I mean, the testing was bogus and all kinds of sketchy. This wasn't about a positive test. This was about Nick Diaz being a 3-time offender and being Nick Diaz. Nick Diaz still has a role in that he needs to take better care going into fights, I guess. But we'll see how all of this plays out in the next coming months as this gets appealed and brought, I believe it will be before the Nevada Supreme Court. Much like Vanderlei Silva, who was handed a lifetime ban and then appealed, and they were like, well, you can't ban him for life, and it got reduced. So I'm sure we will have plenty more to discuss about the courtroom machinations of this, but I want to get into some of...
Hey, right before we jump off, I want to share a Bocephus story. This falls right in this same kind of principle. So going back to way back when in the cornfields of Illinois, well, Bocephus could hoop a thing or two, right? So going into the summer of the end of my sophomore year, heading into my junior year, the last day of school, I was walking out, my superintendent came up, made a point to he beelined out to find me before I made it to my car. And he said, hey, I just want to let you know that unfortunately, with the way your grades fell towards the end of the year, you are going to be ineligible for all sports the entire first semester, the first 18 weeks of your junior year. So that meant I couldn't play football at all, and then that bled into the basketball season, which at the time, you know, I had a starting spot going into varsity. So I was really upset about it, but those were the rules. I did not get the grades I was supposed to. I was ineligible. I was mad. I was pissed the whole summer. But here's the thing. Here's the Diaz relation. So old cunning Bocephus decides I go through all of it, right? Like, I missed football, but I started basketball. I went through all the practices. I did everything that I had to do, and I sat and watched the games. You know, I was benched because I couldn't play. But then at Christmas break is the end of the semester. Okay, in the interim between Christmas break and then the next semester starting, there's a huge basketball tournament in Northern Illinois. That's a big showcase camp for college coaches, for all, you know, it's just the place you need to be because that's where all the talent comes in. And it's a spot that I believed I deserved to be at. I did my punishment. I served out my semester. So allow me to play in the middle where after my semester is over. So I went in front of a school board hearing, and my reputation from where I'm from, it was bristled like a Diaz situation, and they absolutely shot me down. It was a hard life's lesson because I was like, all you have to do, I'm not breaking any rules here. I'm just adjusting what you said. Like, I've done my time. Let me play. And they held out, and they unanimously voted against me that I could not play until 2 weeks later when the official school year started. So, talking about all this Diaz stuff, give me Hoosier flashbacks, man. I got the short short. But it's true. Like, I was young and proud, and I kind of marched into that situation. Like, hey, I've done this. You need to bend this my way. You need to, you know, I don't care what your situation is. I've already done my time. I'm ready to do this. They just don't care. Rules are rules. You change one guideline for somebody, you have to change it for the rest of them. Like talking about this, man, I still got the newspaper clippings. Like, that was a story, like where I'm from.
I want to make a joke about, you know, there not being a lot of talent in your area in terms of hoop and things like that. But it's Indiana, and it's a very rich basketball state. And I know that you got some skills on the court, so I will let it slide. And it's true. It's one of those things that, you know, you have to learn that lesson at some point, that the world just doesn't fall the way you want it. There are, as you said, there are guidelines, there are parameters that we all have to adhere to in life and in our jobs that we may, you know, we probably disagree with a lot of them, but we can't just say F the free world and go on. So we'll see what happens with Nick. I want to get into, obviously, whenever this kind of stuff happens, social media lights up, big sites write stories about pros react to : whatever the story is. I don't particularly care so much about what every fighter said on Twitter about it, because the majority agree with everyone else that Nick Diaz got railroaded and that this decision is crazy and 5 years is nuts. And we know the Free Diaz hashtag is making its way around Twitter these days. The one that really jumped out for me, and it came to light this morning, so Wednesday morning, is Henry Cejudo, UFC flyweight contender, set to face Jussier Formiga November 21st in Monterrey, Mexico, in which very well could be a number one contender title eliminator type fight. Through his representation, Bill McFarlane, he sent a message to MMA Fighting declaring that going forward, based on the way the Nick Diaz situation was handled, Henry Cejudo isn't willing to fight in the state of Nevada going forward. This is a guy, for people that maybe don't know, is an Olympic gold medalist, went through hundreds of tests with the U.S. Olympic Commission and with USADA, has never tested positive. Just absolutely appalled by the way everything went down, and has subsequently said, sorry, UFC, I don't feel comfortable fighting there for this commission that absolutely just made this up on the fly and freight trained this dude. That, to me, is the first true step, true sign of solidarity that has some value from the fight community. As great as it is for everybody to get on social media and say they disagree, and Ronda Rousey to just unprovoked unasked during the UFC 190 sort of on sale press conference from Australia that took place overnight Tuesday into Wednesday morning, talk about how she thinks it's bullshit. This is an actual action that has ramifications. This is a potential title fight, maybe, that Henry Cejudo won't be willing to do in Nevada because of this. It's the first time there's something that the UFC has to address that impacts their potential business and that hits the NSAC, where we've said it's most important in the pocketbook. Your thoughts on this decision, and do you think we see other fighters follow suit going forward?
Well, I think that, yes, it's a noble decision by Henry. But think about it. You know, he's already got a fight book in Mexico. He's in a division where the champ has already proven that he's not a draw in Vegas. I think it's a safe move. I love the sentiment of it all, but we're not talking about, you know, I believe Yahoo had an article that Ronda Rousey was saying, I don't think we should be, you know, tested for anything. She didn't say anything about Nick Diaz, as far as I'm concerned, right? Or am I wrong?
She said at this press conference that she doesn't think they should be tested for weed. I know that for sure. I haven't read the article, so I can't speak to whether it was we shouldn't be tested for anything, which would be crazy since her stance all along has been, I won't fight Cyborg because she tested positive in the past.
Yeah, yeah. So that's what I mean. Like, I get it. I get, like, Henry doing that. And, yes, that's what it's going to take. Like, that's the fighters. The fighters are the ones that are going to have to make a difference. And they're going to have to make a difference like what Henry's trying to do. Now, where you get into murkier waters is, say, the UFC says, hey, Henry, guess what? We just booked you, or you, like, the fight that we're giving you takes place in Las Vegas. And then Henry says, no, I'm not fighting in Las Vegas. Well, then he just broke his contract with his promoter and officially not broke a contract, but he officially turned down a fight. And what that does is that opens up a whole different cast of a whole different, you know, can of worms for that guy, because right. I mean, that's the truth. That's how it happens. I mean, contracts get extended. There's all these things worked in there that if you're turning down opponents when you're not injured, you're just asking for trouble. So yeah, I get it. Like I said, there's so much. There needs to be something done, and it needs to be something that, you know, I saw a White House petition filed, and or so, you know, like these Diaz free Diaz shirts that I guess Chael Sonnen's selling, and Diaz's lawyer said he didn't have permission to, like all these things are, you know, it's like so MMA, right? Like
it very much is so MMA.
You know, it's true, you know, and not to quote your to borrow off of your patented. That's so Bellator, you know, like this is MMA in general. And that's what I'm saying is, like, people forget that this is an individual sport. So, like, you know, it's like, oh, you know, like, as I heard people say, you know, coming out, and you mentioned earlier, like, what if, would there be any kind of union or any kind of type of protection that Diaz could have? Well, let's be honest, with Diaz having metabolites in all three samples, which he did.
Right.
None of them were crystal clear. You know, this so, you know, people just aren't really talking about that one. But none of them are crystal clear. Had it been a players association, he would never would have passed that. You know what I mean? Like people who get popped on the NFL substance abuse policy are often done through their team's testing. Right. You know what I mean?
Right.
So because it's mandatory and it's random at times.
But the one thing that works in their favor is that when they get into these punishment phases and they get, you know, the suspension gets handed down and then they go in for their appeal, they have people working for them and there is a structure in place, a system in place. Now, I think it probably applies larger to what we need in MMA because, you know, I don't think even having a fighters association or a fighters union in place would have helped Nick Diaz on Monday. I think as we've discussed, that outcome and that decision was pretty much figured out before he even got in the room. But I think on a larger scale, having somebody working for you collectively in these situations where we're talking about drug testing, where we're talking about sort of the punishments that come into play with that are, let's be honest, kind of just randomly decided by these people, even though this is the part of Monday's decision that really makes it seem so ludicrous and clearly vindictive, is that the NSAC just updated their punishments, I guess, 4 months ago and said a third time offender for the category that cannabis falls into would get 36 months. So they just went ahead and tacked on an extra 2 years to that anyways. But I think if you have a union representing you, and I think it would probably even fall into play, sort of tying into a little bit of what Henry Cejudo is trying to bring forth here and trying to do, that these guys would have a little bit more leverage. They would have a little bit more power in sort of these discussions and in these situations, that they're not just at the mercy of going in and having to bow down to the NSAC, having to accept whatever offer is put in front of them by the UFC, and just basically take whatever is given to them like it's the best deal possible and they can't argue and ask for anything more. And that to me is hopefully what we get out of some of this. If there's going to be, you know, for the negative that comes of it, for the stuff that we lose as a sport, hopefully we get some positive going forward and we get some change and some influence. Because if not, it just turns out that, you know, we lose a fighter that everybody likes to watch, myself included, who could very much be an interesting part of the welterweight division, makes our job easier at times because, man, the dude is highly quotable, and we get something that improves out of it.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's no taking away from the merits of what Nick Diaz brings to the cage and what he does for fighting. I mean, we all love him. You know, there's nothing better. I mean, if Nick Diaz's name is on a card, I'm, you know, he's one of the few people I will cancel family plans with to make sure I catch some of it, man, because it's always entertaining and it's always worthwhile. Now, as far as the defense goes and, like, you know, like unions wise, what Diaz did and the team that he put together and how they defended him was great, man. They're perfect. Like, that's – but granted, I don't think every fighter is going to be able to kind of afford that, and I get what you're saying about, like, if a union had that kind of representation. But, you know, we already know how Vegas handles unions. You know what I mean? Like, that's not a good thing there. And I think – but should that discourage the fight? Absolutely not. But what I mean, the thing that I've always said is that we will never see a fighter's union in our lifetime or while this sport's going, at least while I'm alive, is because it's an individual sport with individual rewards.
Right.
Okay? And that's what I mean. No fighter, as much as they have this, you know, team concept, even, you know, I've been at every gym around the country, and ego's a big thing. There's guys who think, man, I'm not sharing this with anybody, you know, like, this is my work. You know, right. There's all kinds of fighters who won't pay their coaches.
Well, I was going to
help them.
I was going
to
say,
get that victory. So yeah, if you try to, you know, but we always joke about the MMA media not being able to agree on anything. Fighters aren't agreeing on anything either.
Well, I was going to say, you hear the stories about guys that when they start out that it's, yeah, no problem, coach, I'll pay you 5%. And then they get to that sort of higher tax bracket and get earning a little bit more, and that's when they want to decide, you know, maybe I should just pay you a flat amount. And it's like, well, where was that flat amount when you were making 5 and 5 on the regional circuit or 10 and 10 in your first UFC fight? You were cool with paying me 5% then, but now that you're making big bucks, you don't want to pay me that 5%. So you're 100% right. I mean, we in one of the, you know, many things that Ronda Rousey said in this press conference in Australia last night, I guess one of them was that, you know, she believes fighters should be paid proportionate to what they bring in for the UFC. And that to me speaks volumes about what you said, that we're not going to see these guys band together because the Ronda Rouseys of the world, the Conor McGregors of the world earn infinitely more than the guys at the bottom of the totem pole. And at the end of the day, they're not necessarily worried about the earning potential and livelihood of that fighter that just got signed. They're worried about their own bottom line. And that, you know, is problematic. Dude,
and not to interrupt you, but we saw this when the Reebok deal came out. When they started showing the tier system, people are like, wait a minute, I'm making as much as him? and I've had so, and I've had this many fights in, or I'm not doing this, and I, or I've done this, you know, like, yeah, it, that's not the case. But, you know, back, like I said, not to name names, but, you know, on the fighter things, you know, on the fighter side of things, I know, I've heard stories of fighters who not only get a win bonus, but a knockout bonus, $250K checks. And that not only can they not pay their trainers or won't pay their trainers, then they're buying new cars and driving them to practice.
Right.
Sorry, coach, I don't have your money, but check out this new car I got, this new Corvette.
Right.
I mean, so this is the culture that's out there. That's why, I get it, why people and fans think that a fighter union is going to work, but it would have taken. So the only thing I thought we might have been moving in that direction when George St. Pierre started to take his stance, right. Yeah, because he's still a valued superstar in the sport. He walked away. He made his comments about the drug situation. If St. Pierre would have been that guy that rallied for a union, as a guy who has no flaws on his record. Through what, you know, like his personal track record, I think there's a chance. I think there would have been a chance, but now St. Pierre's gone, Silva's on his way out, you know, and then you have like it's a Ronda and Conor show, and both of those people are out for themselves. They're you know, people are deluding themselves if they don't think that Ronda Rousey and Conor McGregor are businesses now.
Right.
They're businesses. That's what they do. Conor can be sincere, and I believe that he's saying that he wants better things for more people. But at the same time, Conor earned everything he had on his own. He took his own path to do it. So why would he instruct people to take away more money that he believes belongs to him? You know what I mean? So I just, yeah, man, I get why people say it, but I just, it's never going to happen.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't think we're going to see it in our lifetime as MMA journalists, which who knows, may last another, you know, 20 years, may last another 20 minutes. You never know. It's the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio, E. Spencer Kite with Dwayne Finley. We'll leave the Nick Diaz stuff for now. As I said, I'm sure we'll have future podcasts on appeals and other offshoots from it. I want to actually touch on, and you and I aren't necessarily guys that pay a great deal of attention to Bellator, in part mostly just because we're so busy with UFC stuff, and that's sort of what our readership values and wants to consume the most. But they do have a big card coming up, sort of their tandem event this weekend with K1 Kickboxing, their Dynamite event, a joint MMA and kickboxing show on Friday night. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about just sort of the way, I guess, we frame Bellator and the way we look at Bellator, both as media and fans. To me, it has always been that we kind of give Bellator the much easier end of the deal. We give them sort of this pass and look at them as the cute little up-and-coming, the lovable rogues of MMA because they're doing these weird things like joint MMA and kickboxing shows. They're bringing back a 4-man one night tournament this weekend to determine a number one contender in their light heavyweight division. They're, you know, reviving the careers of faded stars like Tito Ortiz and Ken Shamrock and Kimbo Slice. Do we cut Bellator too much? Like, if the UFC tried to do any of these things, would people be as interested and as forgiving or complimentary as they are when Bellator does them?
Well, and I think it's actually has – I don't think one really has anything to do with the other now. I believe that with Scott Coker coming on board, I believe he had a clear vision. Like the legitimate league is going to be – and I say this, you know, for a reason – the legitimate league is going to be the UFC. There's no way you're ever going to usurp them or unseat them. They are the NBA of mixed martial arts. Now, I choose to see Scott Coker's and Bellator as like, you know, semi-pro. They're like the CBA, man. Like, you know, they like it's free corn dog night, you know, and like, you know, like with the different color, you know, the tricolor ball, like. They're, you know, they brought in that. That's where the 3-point line came from. That's where slam dunk contest came from. Like, all these good things came, and eventually, you know, they merged over. Some of the teams merged over, and some of them didn't. But I think that's what Scott Coker has chosen to do. He's like, hey, look, We can't go, you know, because the Bjorn Rebney years proved it. I don't care if you're putting on a fight every Friday and you're doing tournaments. It just doesn't matter, man. Like, it just does not matter. Like, you are not going to make waves because nobody is going to say, hey, look, that guy right there, Rick Hahn, who I've seen fight in multiple tournaments now for like the seventh year, is never going to beat Jim Miller. You know what I mean? Like, he's never going to beat Eddie Alvarez. You know, he's never going to do these things. So, like, they're always going to kind of be seen as kind of second tier. Now, I think Scott Coker's vision was like, you know what? Less shows, more bang for the buck. So the way I see it is I think Bellator and I think the MMA community has really embraced it as kind of like the extravaganza kind of situation. You know, I'm like, oh, you know, you have these things that are coming to you every Saturday from the UFC. But this is something that's going to be fun. Okay, and that's what I mean. That's like a kind of a circus feel. And I didn't want to say circus because I'm like, man, I just, you know, the thought of Shamrock all clown painted up, it makes me makes me laugh. But that's what it is. It's kind of like the, hey, look, you have your serious thing over here, and we have this over here. I mean, because really, I mean, I'm not taking away the credibility of Liam McGeary or a guy like Will Brooks or a Mike Chandler. But I'm just saying, if you follow the beat and the tone of their promotion. Like the promotional tools, it is definitely like big top style. You know what I mean? They're going to be like, hey, you know what? The fight you want, the fight that you should have seen, you know, that maybe 15 years ago, well, you got it tonight. You know, and they don't apologize for it. And people are tuning in and loving it. So yeah, doing this co-pro show, who knows? I mean, like, I haven't seen anybody write anything serious about it. I don't really have any serious opinions of it. But I'll tell you what, I'm going to tune in just to be like, you know, what the hell is going on here? We got simultaneous fights happening. Gilbert Melendez's wife, Carrie's she's making her Bellator debut that night. You know, you have the tournament. I always love to watch King Mo do his thing. So I'm going to be watching, but I'm going to be watching like, hell yeah, I'm expecting fun. Not being like, okay, well, the fate of a division happens here. Or this is who climbs up. This is who has a chance to be the real Super Bowl champions. That doesn't happen over there. You know, like over here in the UFC, on this side of it, it does. That's kind of the story all the time. We're looking at races, divisional races. We're looking at, you know, prospects coming up. We're looking at all these things. And Bellator are like, yeah, they have some of that there. But, man, those fights, those main event fights are just crazy.
So if you're a guy like Liam McGeary who takes on Jacob Christopher Tito Ortiz on Friday night.
Oh, you went there. Huh?
I went full name. Yeah, absolutely. Shout out to Ben Folks and Chad Dundas for always breaking out the Tito Ortiz full name on this co-main event podcast. If you're Liam McGeary and you're 8-0, you're a guy that I think and have thought as he's ascended the ranks in Bellator is a reasonable prospect in a division that is very, very shallow overall. Are you frustrated by the fact that you have to fight Tito Ortiz to get a bit of a push? If you're a guy like Ill Will Brooks, who I think could be a top 10 lightweight in the UFC, are you frustrated by the fact that, you know, there's a good chance you will be not the main event because Kimbo Slice is going to face Dada 3000 next time out, and that's going to get the bigger promotion because that'll draw more fans and get more internet traffic? Or do you just happily take your money and be a part of the spectacle and maybe bide your time until it's peace out and go elsewhere?
I think it's a little bit of both. For McGeary, I guarantee McGeary's happy as a clam. You know, like, no, you tell me I can't tell you right now, think off the top of my head, one person McGeary has fought. When I think about McGeary, here's the two things that come to mind. I know he's rangy and talented, but I also remember thinking that he looks like what the child of Kendall Grove and Andre Arlovsky would look like. That's what I think.
Complete
and I know he's,
and I know
he's British, you know? So yeah, fighting a guy like Tito Ortiz, who everybody knows and everybody can, you know, name association, that's huge for him. Now, the Will Brooks question, that's a little more touchy, okay? Because I think, you know, Will Brooks is the guy who's hungry for some shine. You know, he wants to be at the top, you know, all the way up to both Chandler fights, and especially the second one where he smashed him out, you know, and Chandler was that guy for Bellator. So – I think Will Brooks, you know, I think he probably has a little bit of contention sitting behind Kimbo and Power Man 5000. But no respect to Dada. I don't need Dade County coming up in this up to Indy. But no. What I'm saying is, I think there's a difference. But the thing about Coker is that he keeps reappearing in this business because he's great at it. You know, he's been around longer. Way before Zuffa started doing their thing, he was packing shows in San Jose.
Right.
You know, live attendance records, knocking them out. So I think Coker came back to Bellator with a specific plan. Like, hey, I tried to run a neck and neck with these guys in Strikeforce, and it just didn't work. So what I'm going to do this time is I'm going to go for the draws. I'm going to go for name recognition. I'm going to get, you know, I'm going to pay Tito Ortiz the money, and I'm going to put him all over Spike TV. I'm going to pay King Mo, guys that can get out there and sell fights. And that's what, and I mean, and that's followed the plan. You know, he's getting it done.
Well, and like you said, not to take anything away from Scott Coker, because I think he is a phenomenal promoter. I think he does a great job. I guess the rub for me is just seeing and hearing the commentary of like, oh, look out, Bellator's on the come up and people are going to go over there and more people are going to leave the UFC because of the Reebok deal and this or that or the other thing. And look at Bellator, they signed Phil Davis. Like, the guys that have gone over there, like, it's weird to me, the transference of when they're in the UFC, it's like, ah, Josh Thompson's on the end of his career and, you know, he's no longer a top 10 guy at lightweight, or Phil Davis, we know what his ceiling is in the light heavyweight division. And then they go to Bellator and it's like, ooh, look at Bellator signing the Punk. Look at Bellator signing Josh Koscheck. It's like 2 months ago, we just watched Josh Koscheck get tuned in back-to-back fights. He hasn't won in a long ass time. Why is this something of value? Why does this make Bellator suddenly be this attractive place for other fighters? To me, it's talk to me if someone, not to disrespect any of these guys, but talk to me if someone of value, if someone of note, if someone that is still a contender in the UFC fights out their contract and then says peace out and heads over, rather than a 37-year-old Josh Thompson or somebody of that nature.
And really, for any kind of talk like that to be substantial, that's what's going to have to happen. Remember when Gil Melendez played the waters, was going to, you know, his contract was up, was talking, you got to entertain off of Bellator, ultimately resigned with the UFC. Okay, you're going to need somebody in that wave when Gil was right there to make that change.
Yeah.
I just don't think it's going to happen, man.
Well, and that's what I was going to say. That when that took place, I know I wrote a piece for Sportsnet here in Canada saying, like, why this is a big deal. Even though he's gone back to the UFC, it's a big deal that Bellator was willing to put out that money, that they made the UFC match. It ultimately became a very good thing for Gilbert Melendez, who got probably a pay raise. He got the Ultimate Fighter appearance. He got a title shot. All things that improved his situation at the time. So for me, it's going to take somebody that's still in the mix in the UFC going over before I kind of take Bellator seriously. But as you said, they are kind of the ABA to the UFC's NBA right now. And I'm not going to lie, I'm going to watch on Friday night, because it is going to be sort of weird to see kickboxing fights and MMA fights happening side by side. I want to see Liam McGeary fight Tito Ortiz because, you know, I want to see him take aim at Tito's gigantic head more than anything. The tournament kind of freaks me out because I think we're going to end up with really long, boring, drawn out fights because it's going to be a lot of wrestling, but it's a spectacle. And it's to me, I guess it's sort of the, like, I want us to be bigger and better than we are when it comes to MMA. And the fact that these spectacles keep outdrawing really good fights is kind of disappointing to me.
Oh, yeah. And, you know, it just popped in my head, and maybe we revisit this at a later date in a different podcast. But I know for a fact that the Diaz brothers have been on have gone as guest coaches for multiple editions of the Ultimate Fighter. I know they were there to help Roy Nelson when he was coaching against Shane Carwin. He was there. They were there a lot for Gilbert Melendez, and TB just never showed him. It was like they were never there. So maybe that's a mystery. Maybe we solve this as the Keyboard Kimura. Maybe this is our Scooby-Doo. Maybe we figure out why the Diazes are never featured on The Ultimate Fighter. But yeah, like the, you know, kind of wrapping up the idea on the sideshow. Yeah, in the tournament, I have the absolute same fear that, you know, two fights in one night, that's crazy. Right. But yeah, these guys are all grinders in there. So I fully expect the first fight for both, for all four to be a slow grinding affair, and then, you know, whatever they have left to pour on, you know. Right. But that's what I mean. But the spectacle is the right word. I mean, it's like I said, it's the free corn dog night, man. It's like it is. It's like, okay, well, look,
10,000 get a souvenir bat.
Absolutely. And then you get to do the halftime show with the dancing, and there's all this, like, you know, pomp and circumstance. That's what it is, because if it was straight up fighting, then it's like, okay, hey, look, we got a 10 fight card, we got a good main event, boom. It's like, oh no, we got two fights, two different situations going on simultaneously. You know, it's Thunderdome, baby.
Your prediction, you know, is there going to be a t-shirt cannon at this event on Friday night?
Oh, absolutely, there'll be a t-shirt cannon, and probably a Tito Ortiz bobblehead, but I don't want to get people excited.
All right, so we'll end sort of the overall MMA discussion there. Before I let you go, obviously we've had you on the show several times in the past, usually bill you as Dwayne Finley from Bleacher Report.
That oh, you're as, going there, huh?
That, as people know, is no longer the case. But just fill people in on what's coming up for you and what's going on with you, just in terms of where they can get your stuff, because, I mean, I know, since we are such good friends and cohorts on this show fairly regularly, that there's still lots of stuff popping up and popping off. But let people know where they can find you in this interim as you figure out sort of where your journey will take you next.
I thought you were steering right into it, dude. I thought
we're not getting into any of that. We're letting sleeping dogs lie. We're gonna, as you did when everything jumped off, we're gonna take the high road and just leave it alone.
I'm down with that, man. You know, I'm down with that. You know, whatever's whatever over there. But yeah, you know, this next from here to the end of the year is going to be pretty interesting. I heard you laugh there, dude, because I know you're like, I know what Finley's thinking. He's gonna do it, but no, in all seriousness, there's a bunch of fun stuff in the works, and the rest of the year is going to be, for anybody who's, you know, followed me for any length of time, I spent the last 3 years at Bleacher Report. That situation ended at the end of August, and for the next 3 months, I'm just going to kind of be a freewheeling Bob Dylan, man. Like, I'm going to kind of be all over the place. I have certain things in certain places, you know, a couple piece a month here, piece a month there, a upcoming project with Carlos Condit. I'm doing his training camp. That's going to be one of the prominent sites here in MMA. I don't want to announce any of that yet, but on the Carlos Condit thing, if you want to get excited about it, go check out right now on UFC.com, a feature I did with Carlos where he talks about the mentality of everything going into the fight, man. It's kind of some savage stuff in there, right, Spencer? Like, He kind of gets gritty in there, you know?
I was going to say, I saw it go up this morning on UFC.com, you catching up with your boy Carlos Condit, the natural born killer, who I know you've spent a ton of time with. It's not just a, this is one of the things, and I'm going to give you some pats on the back and people will think I'm just, you know, shining you up because you're my boy. But one of the things I have always admired about your work and always loved about your work, and one of the reasons I've always recommended your work to people that want to read about MMA and about just different stuff than your standard week to week, is that you build these relationships with these dudes. I've seen it firsthand on the road, the connection you have with these guys, that it extends well beyond just, I'm fighting opponent A, my game plan is B, these are the things I'm thinking, great, see you later. It gets into sort of motivations, it gets into far deeper conversations than you tend to get, and you and Carlos have a connection that runs deep for a few years now, and several pieces, that this one is just another continuation in that, and knowing that you're going to do this training camp with him for his fight against Robbie Lawler is something I'm looking forward to, and everybody should be looking forward to.
And you know, that's the interesting part there, is because, as you know, Spencer, Carlos is the guy who is guarded. Carlos, the guy who's never really given much. outside of what he shows you in the cage. And as in his own words, he aims for exhibition of violence. But there's so much going on. And this is why, for the listeners, this is why Spencer and I, you know, we've never really talked about this publicly, but we share, this is one of the things we share that we bonded over to become immediate friends, is that there's so much more here beyond just, like he said, the pre-fight cycles, the random drubbing questions of how was your training camp? You know, where's this win going to get you? Come on. There's a reason that these men and women wake up to do this every day, and it's not normal. I'm not saying that that's something, some kind of freak show. I'm just saying the average person is adverse to conflict. They are. That's just the way it is. You don't want to have, you know, you don't want any kind of friction. And if you do go over that line, and you all are about friction, then you usually wind up in some sort of the penal system. So correct. When I'm fighting out, I like when I did the road trip, as I do like, here's a plug for you. The road trip book that's coming out next year. It's all about these themes, because I found out that as I, you know, these relationships and connections that I'd made, there was always some other kind of fascination. And I'm not scared to use that word. There's a fascination there that I could see somebody and I'm like, you know what? That's not regular. I mean, there's something more there. There's something deeper there. As a person, not just a fighter, as an athlete, as a person that I want to find out about. Like I said before, I think I used the words in a Matt Brown article. I said, you know, you don't know how to play. You don't play great jazz unless you've been through some shit.
Right.
And anybody who watches Matt Brown fight knows that that's just not how people fight.
Right.
So those are the themes that Spencer and I mutually have chased, and I think that's what, if you read Spencer's great stuff, it sets it apart. And also, dude, I know you don't like me doing this, but I'm plugging two of your articles here for your listeners. Go check out on the Kimura, Spencer's article about the Nick Diaz situation, which we've talked about all show. He absolutely knocks out the box. And my homeboy here, in one of his freelancers pieces, tackled the Ronda Rousey remake, which I'm not going to talk about here because I'll get upset and I'll lose my composure, and I'm a difficult man to make lose composure. But it's my boy Spencer absolutely knocked it out the box about Rousey doing the remake and taking the role of the great Saint Patrick Swayze and playing Dalton, and it just shames me. And if you look at Instagram, you know who is maybe upset more about any about this is Jim Miller.
Right.
Jim Miller is having a tough time with this announcement. He's hashtagging. I think Jamie's lost it. I think he's out there screaming in the woods. But yeah, that's so. I know I went a long way around what I was saying, but yeah, I have stuff coming up UFC.com, a book coming out in 2016 on the road trip stuff, which is going to be can't miss. Spencer's seen a little bit of it. In the next couple weeks, follow me on Twitter at Dwayne from the MMA. I'll announce all the places that I'm kind of doing this freelance dance for.
Well, and we'll definitely have you on as the book sort of gets continued towards completion and publication and comes out, obviously, because, you know, that's an accomplishment for anybody, whether it's, you know, my usual partner in crime on this or just anybody in this business that I respect and that I admire. And you definitely fall into that category. As he said, he is Dwayne Finley. Follow him at Dwayne Finley MMA on Twitter. As for me, you know where to get me, at Spencer Kite, KYTE. I want to thank you for being on with me again. I want to thank everybody for listening. Wish our friend Paul Chapman a speedy recovery and return to podcasting on a more consistent basis going forward. Last thing that I will do that also ties in with you, Dwayne, shout out to Seth Kelly, all the people at UFC Magazine. The final edition is on newsstands now. We both had an opportunity to work for that publication a number of times in the past, gave us some interesting stories, some interesting angles, some interesting pieces for our portfolios. It is a sad day to see another magazine go by the wayside, but thank you to Seth and everybody there for those opportunities. Go pick it up. It is a collector's edition. I've got a couple pieces in it, so shameless plug for me. But until next week, this has been the Keyboard Kimura podcast on Province Sports Radio. Hope you enjoyed it. We'll talk to you again soon.
You've been listening to Keyboard Kimura, the official mixed martial arts podcast of the province. Read the Keyboard Kimura blog on theprovince.com. Follow them on Twitter at Keyboard Kimura, or visit them on Facebook at facebook.com/KeyboardKimura.